Hey guys, thanks for tuning us in for the fourth episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you would, please take the time to drop a like, a comment, or feedback. Today's guests include astronaut Dr. Mike Massimino, Sean Evans, the host of Hot Ones, the game show on True TV, new country artist from Canada, Manny Blue, and investigative reporter, author, correspondent, so many other things, Dylan Howard will be joining us as well. Our first guest, like I mentioned, is Dr. Mike Massimino. He's written a new kid's book, Spaceman, the true story of a young boy's journey to becoming an astronaut, sharing his story from childhood through becoming an astronaut. You may also remember him from a recurring role on Big Bang Theory. First off, Mike, thanks so much for your time.
Cameron, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Now, being a spaceman, obviously, folks dealing with COVID-19, the coronavirus, social distancing, quarantining, and you may have a little bit of knowledge on the subject of being kind of closed in a bit, right?
Yeah, it's really reminds me of what it's like to be in space in some ways. Living in close quarters with other people and needing to make sure you are respectful of each other and get along as best you can, putting on your best self because you've got to get along with each other. You don't want to be causing conflict where there's no reason to have that. So living in close quarters with people is something that I've done in space and doing it now. And other things too, like, you know, just remembering you're not alone. There are other people out there that we're all going through this together. And in space, when we had a problem, we had people to help us on the ground, the control center, and so on. And our families were still thinking about us, even though we were in space. And that's the same way it is here, you know, our support system. And we need to be a support system for other people. That's all still available. It's just not right in front of us like it typically might be.
We mentioned the new book, Spaceman. It's the true story of a young boy's journey to becoming an astronaut. And for you, Mike, how cool is it to have this book out there and obvious a bit of a true story about yourself, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a memoir. It's actually an adaptation of the adult book, Spaceman. The first word is the same, and then the rest of the title is a little bit different. The first book was An Astronaut's Unlikely Journey to Unlock the Secrets of the Universe. And this one is, as you say, it's a young boy's, true story of a young boy's journey becoming an astronaut. So it's more in, it's more appropriate for, the stories are more appropriate for younger kids. Appropriate, meaning that I tried to, the first book was a New York Times bestseller, did really well, and there was nothing bad in it that wouldn't be appropriate for young kids. So a lot of young kids read the first book. And a lot of their parents read it, and teachers, and I got some very nice notes back. And I thought that with all that reception that I had, I really wasn't targeting young people for it. It was more a generic sort of adult book for people of all ages. And I thought, well, maybe if we can really target this and bring in some new stories that weren't in the first book, rewrite what is there that I think would resonate with the young folks. That might be something that would be worthwhile, and that's what we decided to do, and our publisher went for it, and that's the new book that's out. So it's a rewrite with a bunch of new stories that I think are better, will resonate more with the younger people than some of the stories we had before.
And Mike, talking about some rewrites of the stories, as you start thinking about the true story, I mean, your life, and you look back, and what was it maybe that sparked the interest, or maybe a couple of the new memories that came forward? How did those spark for you?
Well, some of the things I wrote more about was if in the last few years since I've left NASA, I've done a lot of speaking to lots of audiences, and I'm a professor at Columbia, and I speak to college students, and I sometimes speak at high schools through my job at Columbia, and at the Intrepid Museum, I meet up with a lot of younger kids, a lot of elementary, middle school kids as well, and there was just certain things that I think messaging that would be more appropriate for them. So, for example, I decided to share some of the stories I had, more of my stories from when I was in elementary school and middle school. Of not doing as well as I'd like in school. I think going to school is the hardest thing that you can do. And it's hard, and sometimes you don't do as well as you'd like, and it's not because you're stupid. It's because it's hard. It's hard to learn stuff. Learning anything is not easy, and that's always been a struggle for me. And I had to work hard at it, and I didn't always do as well as I'd like. But what I found was if I just stuck to it and if I got help, I think that's what a lot of times we think, you know, as a young person, I think something, oh, what am I going to do? I didn't do well on this test. What am I going to do? You know, go speak to your teacher. Try to find some help. Get someone to help you. And then you know, it's just sometimes looking at it in a different way and not giving up and maybe adjusting your study habits or concentrating on it a little bit more than maybe some other things. So I think that those are the types of things that I like to share. There's one in particular where I met after I became an astronaut, I went back to my elementary school, and my fourth grade teacher was still teaching at the school. And they arranged it so we would have lunch together during this visit when I was visiting different classrooms. And she came up to me and she said she told her kids at breakfast that she was going to have lunch with a former student who had become an astronaut. And then her kids said, wow, Mom, he must have been really smart. And then she thought for a moment and she said, well, if he was, I'm sure he was bright, but if he was really smart, I would have remembered. So then she went on to say, but that's not always what's most important. And the truth is, I never was the smartest kid in the class ever, whether it was at a Columbia, MIT, or in Mrs. Oko's fourth grade class. I was not the best student in there. I always tried hard, did my best, got help when I needed it, helped other people when I could. And I think that that's more important. And those are just those are the types of stories. There's more of them like that, because this sort of these different stages that I went through from elementary school, junior high, and high school, it was this, and into college and graduate school. You know, you keep meeting more and more challenges. You keep getting knocked down and need to get up again.
And Mike, you talked about several of the different things you've had the opportunity to do. And I think is the top on the bucket list moments that you checked off, was that being the first to send a tweet from space? I mean, was that the pinnacle?
No, that was that was just one of those things that happened. A lot of times you just need to say okay to things and not be resistive. And I wish I could have, sometimes I resist things, but sometimes I don't. And this one thing was, NASA asked me to do it, and there was just the timing of it. They thought I'd be the right guy. And I was like, okay, sure, first guy to tweet from space. Take that, me and Neil Armstrong. So it was definitely a fun thing to do as a way to share the story. And the book is, you know, the book, what we're doing right now, having this conversation, other TV appearances I've done, and my teaching even, I think it's just a way to share the story and to teach. And in some ways, I think social media is that as well. We're able to share things that are going on in our lives with others. And that's why I was really thrilled to get a chance to send that first tweet from space.
And you talk about having the opportunity to share, and the love for the science and for all of the technology for you. Obviously, you love to share that with others into a new generation. And when you know that you're inspiring others, I mean, how awesome is that for you?
I'm gratified if that ever happens, because I was inspired by a lot of people. I think that's something that astronauts can do. Inspire people because we have really cool jobs and we've all struggled to get there. And that's one of the reasons I was hoping to become an astronaut, is that maybe I could inspire someone someday. I was inspired by a moonwalker, a guy by the name of Charlie Duke, one of the 12 people that walked on the moon. I was a grad student coming off a tough semester at MIT, and I met him one summer. I was working down at the Marshall Space Flight Center, and I told him, he asked me what I was doing, and I said I was a student at MIT, and he told me how tough it was for him and how he almost didn't get out of there, but he did. And I thought, well, man, if you struggled there and walked on the moon, maybe I'm not doing that bad. If it was tough for you, you know, maybe it's not crazy that it's tough for me. And that's what I think sometimes we can hopefully do, is you never know, a little piece of advice or writing something or a conversation here or there maybe can make a difference in someone's life, as it's happened to me many times.
Well, that's awesome. Again, the new book, Spaceman, the true story of a young boy's journey to becoming an astronaut. And Mike, always great to visit with you, and always want to make sure and let folks know where they can find out more about the book and also all the other things you've got going on as well.
Yeah, a lot's happening, and I really appreciate your interest and kindness in having me and spreading that word around. And stay healthy, everybody.
All right. Well, Mike, always good to visit with you. Have a great rest of your weekend, sir.
Thank you.
Find out about all of his social media and other information online at MikeMassimino.com. Next up, I had the chance to visit with the host of Hot Ones, the game show, which airs Tuesday nights on True TV. We'll talk with Sean about the show, his YouTube series, and more. Sean, always good to visit with you, brother.
Yep, thanks so much for having me. Good chatting with you always. Now, Sean, tell the folks a little bit. I mean, we've talked about the game show before. If they haven't checked it out, if they've been under a rock, haven't turned a TV on, I think is about the only way that they haven't seen anything about the show. But if anybody fits into that category, let them know a little bit about the new show.
Sure. Well, it's like, sort of a classic game show in the same way the web series is kind of a classic interview show. But the twist in it all is scorching hot chicken wings. So basically, it's two teams of two competing against each other for a chance at $25,000 and two icy cold milkshakes at the end of the road. And they do rounds of trivia all the while eating scorching hot chicken wings that attack the senses. But if they're still standing at the end of it, and if they nail that final round in the Ring of Fire, $25,000 cash, which is good work if you can get it.
That's right. Now, where did I know this started out YouTube and several other things for you. You've been doing interviews with the Hot Ones, and what has maybe been the greatest reaction to a hot wing endeavor, if you will?
Well, I think sort of the quintessential episode, the litmus test, if you will, on whether or not you'll like this show is the Gordon Ramsay episode. He brought along with him like a whole Mary Poppins bag of anecdotes to try to quell the spice. So if you're interested in at least checking out the show, that's the one that I recommend people dip their toes in the water with, the Gordon Ramsay episode. If you like that, then you'll probably like Hot Ones. If you don't like that episode, you probably won't like the show.
And to get the celebrity feedback and the folks that have been interested in coming on and being a part of this, I mean, for you with that idea coming up and getting the response that it has, what's that like for you on a personal level?
Well, it's been really interesting. I mean, at first, like, we didn't have high aspirations for the show. You know, we thought we'd be like a funny sort of circus act on the internet. But, you know, we had such a passionate cult following of fans that really pushed us to make the show more than just a spicy chicken wing challenge, and really pushed us to create thoughtful, career-spanning interviews. And I think that it was through making the interview the primary character in the show, and then the hot wings as sort of a background character, is really what's given it its longevity now, like 5 years, 12 seasons, and some of the crazy names that we've had on the show. So it's been, you know, sort of a slow snowball effect over that time, and it seems to have just grown a little bit week over week, so it's been very gradual, which I'm grateful for. But when you look back on the journey, you're like, wow, like, we really swam a long way.
And you talked about the seasons going on of Hot Ones, and I know the season finale is coming up as well. And is it bittersweet as you see a season ending, or does it just kind of inspire you to what's to come in the upcoming season?
Well, you know, I'm a person that kind of just likes to make a thing and then put it out in the world, and then kind of whatever happens to that thing. But then I just sort of focus my energy on making the next thing. So that's kind of how I am with finales and stuff. You know, we've done 12 season finales with the web series, and now we have one coming up with the TV show, and it's kind of fun to, you know, crack a beer with the people who helped you make it and celebrate what happened, and then just focus on making the next thing.
Now, what kind of inspiration do you get for the next big thing? I mean, what kind of things inspire you on a daily basis?
Well, I think what's been fun about the show is we're so immersive with the research. So the thing that keeps it fresh and interesting and always different for me is, you know, walking a mile in someone else's shoes. And if they're an actor, watching all their movies, or if they're a singer, listening to all their music, or if they're a writer, reading their books, you know, like, that sort of thing always keeps me interested and puts me in worlds that I otherwise would have never been in. And that's to me the most fun part of the whole thing is not so much like, you know, the final episode or whatever, but the process to make it. And that's what keeps me inspired.
And the tracking of the episodes since the pandemic has hit, how do you feel about seeing the numbers going up and the folks delving into something to maybe take their minds off of their everyday doldrums?
Well, that's, you know, the thing that I think. I don't think, like, entertainers necessarily have, like, a noble cause necessarily. But in times like these, I guess, you know, anything that helps people escape sort of a bleak reality or lets them bask at least in a moment in a sense of normalcy is a good thing for a lot of people. And that's what I'm hoping to do, because that's what shows did for me growing up. And that's what I'm hoping to do with my own. So, that way I'm grateful and really grateful to the fans who've been so positive with the feedback. You know, I've always thought that the show was kind of something that, you know, people would watch during their lunch breaks on a Thursday or watching on Tuesday nights as they eat dinner or whatever. You know, I always thought that it would be that kind of show, but maybe in times like these, it's a little bit more than that, or at least that's the feedback that I've gotten. And that to me is, you know, makes me feel better about what we do on a day-to-day basis.
And of course, the Hot Ones, the game show, Tuesday nights on True TV. And Sean, always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can keep up with you social media wise as well.
Sure. Well, if you want to check out the interview show that's on YouTube, just type in Hot Ones and you'll get a couple hundred episodes at this point. Tuesdays on True TV, and then you know that'll be your chicken wing fix for sure.
Well, Sean, always good to visit with my friend, and hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks so much for having me. It was good chatting with you.
Again, follow him on his socials at Sean C. Evans. Our next guest is new Canadian country artist. I was introduced a couple weeks ago. Manny Blue and I sit down and visit about his latest music.
Manny, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
Now, where did Manny Blue, where did that whole thing start for you? When did you know that music was a driving force in your life?
Well, I was focused on an MMA career before anything, and I had my first fight, tore my quad, luckily won the fight. But in the time of recovery, found a video of B.B. King playing The Thrill Is Gone, a live version, and fell in love with what he was doing, fell in love with the blues, and wanted to do whatever it was that he was doing, I wanted to learn. So quickly fell in love with music in the blues, and got into country because my buddies were all guys playing hockey outside of our home province, and they'd come home every summer and want me to play whatever songs that they were listening to while we were just hanging out. So they said, you can play guitar and sing, why don't you play some of these country songs? So I kind of became a country artist on accident, but I love it ever since, and I wouldn't change anything.
Now, the MMA background, how does that meld in with the musician lifestyle, if you will?
Well, I think discipline is key in both, in just about everything. So I think, you know, going for something so intense like MMA, and there's days you don't really feel like doing it, but you kind of have to figure it out because otherwise you're going to take a lot of punches to the face. You know, there's always those days where either you don't feel like practicing, you don't feel like rehearsing, or whatever it is, and I realize that it's not so bad because the alternative could have been worse.
That's right. Now, bringing a release out today, a new single, what's it like now in the times that we're living in? I mean, everybody's kind of sheltered, still keeping their distance. What's it like trying to get the new music out there?
Well, we recorded this, my EP, back in October. And, you know, I've been wanting to put it out since February, and you know, we kind of slowed it down a little bit. And I thought now would be a really good time. I think, you know, during this whole quarantine thing, I've been really diving deep into other types of music and other influences for the third EP. So I'm really happy to, I was really excited about this one, which is titled New Ink. You know, sonically, I went a different direction, and I really wanted to have more of that country rock in my music this time around. And, you know, Having spent time during quarantine looking at different things, I'm ready for a third EP, so we thought it was time to put out the second one. So this is the second single, comes out today, called Old Money. It's the second single from my new EP, and I couldn't be happier.
For you, has the time being separated, has that helped with inspiration for writing, or has it maybe put a writer's block up for you?
No, it hasn't really. No, I'm really fortunate that I have some pretty good connections down in Nashville that I'm fortunate enough to get some songs sent to me. So haven't been spending a whole lot of time on writing, but definitely have been working on my craft as far as wanting to work on vocals and kind of get that up. So you know, obviously the when the 30P comes around, I'm always looking to improve, you know, album from album. So when the next project comes around, I'm going to be ready, and it's going to be something different. Although, you know, this one is different from the first one. No, I think it really gave me time to see what I wanted to do moving forward. New Ink is going to be, comes out in November, and this 5-song EP that I'm really, really pumped about. And I wanted to find a way to one-up it. So I think much stronger, much more flexible vocal performance for the next project is going to be what you're going to hear. And I think that the time quarantined and, time to spend a little bit where we're not doing shows and we're not getting ready for really anything. It really gave me that time to work on my craft. So, I'm really pumped about this EP coming out. I'm really pumped of every song that we have on it. And I can't wait to, we recorded it back in Nashville in October and been hanging on to it. So I can't wait for everyone to hear it.
Now, I paid attention as you were talking about working on your craft a little bit, and for the layman, the listeners out there that don't understand what that means, when you talk about working on your craft, maybe instrumentation, what are some of the little tidbits that would take you from maybe where you're at a year ago to where you're at today in the daily practices, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, for me, much more a vocalist than really a guitar player. So to me, it was really important to really make sure that, I take this time to be productive and become a much better singer, a much more flexible singer. And, I like big drums. I like loud guitars. And so definitely going to hear that on this EP we're going to be putting out in November. So it's really cool. I just want to keep that up and make the vocals match and get stronger.
There you go. And again, the new EP is out today, and the single again. Manny, I want to make sure and let folks know where they can keep up with not only the new music, but everything you've got going on social media-wise as well.
Yeah, well, the EP actually comes out in November. Today we have the single Old Money. Old Money's coming out today. And you can keep up with anything we got going on Instagram, Manny Blue, BLU Music, or my website, MannyBlueMusic.com, as well as Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. We've got all that stuff going.
All right. Well, Manny, it's been great to visit with you. Looking forward to the EP in November. The new single is Old Town. Pick it up today. And Manny, hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Yes, I'd love to. Thank you so much.
Find out more information online at MannyBlueMusic.com. And our final guest of this episode is Dylan Howard. Dylan is known for breaking some of the biggest stories in the past two decades. We're going to visit about his book, Epstein, Dead Men Tell No Tales. How timely some of the news is, especially during this campaign season.
Dylan, always good to visit with you, my friend.
Cameron, good to be talking with you again.
Now, Dylan, obviously Democratic National Convention last week, Republican National Convention this week, and there's a lot of big names that obviously there's dirt in a lot of closets, and you've delved and dug up some dirt a little bit, haven't you?
Well, yes. I mean, obviously the Jeffrey Epstein scandal is something that is swirling around both the DNC and the GOP. And it's interesting that it has not become a firebrand technique for either side. And I think this goes a long way to explain the nefarious links between Epstein, Maxwell, and both sides of the political aisle. This was not a scandal of sex trafficking that implicated just one ideological line. Over four decades, these two were able to operate in the United States seemingly with impunity during both GOP and DNC-run White Houses, which is perhaps why neither side has chosen to weaponize this as a campaign issue. And of course, one thing that we know is that Bill Clinton and the current president have also sought to minimize their involvement with Jeffrey Epstein, even though their connections are quite close. And I'll give you an idea of just how close the connections are between, well, were between Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and the Clintons. Not only were they friends, Ghislaine Maxwell's nephew was hired after Epstein's conviction to work in her State Department. He worked there for 3 years at a time when she knew that Ghislaine Maxwell was connected to this sex trafficking ring, but hired the nephew of Ghislaine, Alexander Gerasi, who is the son of Ghislaine's sister, Isabel Maxwell. And he had a very powerful and prestigious position within the State Department and the U.S. government. And one source said to me that Secretary Clinton gave Alex a job in a very sensitive area of the Obama administration. And he was fresh out of college and put in charge of the State Department's Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs, covering the Middle East, which in itself was an interesting move because Jeffrey Epstein was doing a lot of his spying for countries in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia.
Now, what do you think is, as new information is still releasing, what are maybe some of the tidbits that maybe have been, maybe opened your eyes a little bit of things that maybe hadn't been come to the surface as of yet, if you will?
Well, I think this is a good example of how Jeffrey Epstein's mid-2000s plea deal with Florida prosecutors really was a whitewash of the depth and depravity that was going on behind closed doors, and how the successful plea deal that he took really resonated not with anybody, that high society didn't look at Epstein and certainly didn't look at Maxwell. She wasn't charged at that time, but didn't look at them through the lens that they're being looked at now. For example, the nephew of Ghislaine Maxwell, whether or not he was suitably qualified, and I'm sure the poor guy is suitably qualified, it's just not a good look in retrospect for Secretary Clinton to have given this nephew a job. And you can say, well, that's guilt by association, sure, but we're not talking about claims of impropriety in a workplace. We are talking about the world's largest and most sophisticated sex ring that was used without impunity on American soil for the benefit of foreign intelligence. And I think that is constantly overlooked in this horrible scenario. Let's not forget there are victims here. Those victims are the young women, hundreds of them, whose lives were destroyed or taken from them as a result of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. What also has emerged recently is the suggestion that the Maxwell and Epstein sex trafficking ring could still implicate others. And I can tell you exclusively this morning that that the Southern District of New York, which had said that they did not believe they were going to charge any other individuals in connection with the Maxwell and Epstein case, remains very active in its probe. It, as soon as 2 weeks ago, spoke to someone in an effort to glean information about a potential target in an ongoing investigation. Now, I'm not going to reveal the name of that target, but that target is currently overseas in a country that doesn't offer extradition, which suggests that the target believes that they may have some serious questions to answer when it comes to the ongoing investigation. this is a country that will not extradite this individual, and a country in which this individual has a close relationship with the leadership of that country. So if we thought that the Ghislaine Maxwell story was seemingly over and she might take a plea deal, think again. The U.S. government is not done with its investigation.
And Dylan, when you look at these investigations, I mean, how deep and how long do we expect this investigation to continue on before we actually see the end result, if you will?
Look, no case is ever over until the statute of limitations expires. Now, in this particular scenario, the statute never really expires because of the nature of the crimes and the fact that there was a plea deal that the federal government has effectively torn up. So I think what we'll see is a situation whereby the federal government will attempt to accumulate more evidence against Ghislaine Maxwell and possibly use that against her in order for her to take some sort of deal with the government to avoid a trial. But again, I must warn, you know, be careful what you wish for, because if this becomes a public trial, I can't see how the U.S. government's inaction on the Epstein and Maxwell sex trafficking ring will be overlooked. And that will do tremendous damage to the U.S. government. The fact that it allowed these known sex traffickers, both sides of the political aisle allowed these known sex traffickers to operate on the United States, on United States soil, and forget about the espionage, allowed them to take and deprave the innocent lives of young women for their own financial gain and to pleasure or to meet their own sexual peccadilloes. It's a heinous and uncomfortable thought.
That is right. And again, Dylan, I want to make sure that we let our listeners know where they can find out more information. The book, Epstein, Dead Men Tell No Tales, and so many other investigative books as well, Dylan.
Well, yes, of course, you can go to, you can go and check out my Amazon page, which lists all the books, Barnes & Noble as well. But I would also suggest that people go to their local brick and mortar stores, which is perhaps more important than ever in the wake of the pandemic and these businesses that have been horribly affected by the shutdowns. And I would encourage people to go to them and reward them in your state for having to survive this horrible situation.
All right. Well, Dylan, always good to visit with you, sir. And hopefully catch up again real soon, my friend.
Cheers. Take care.
Again, find out more information, DylanHoward.com. Thanks again for joining us this episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, or anything else maybe you'd like to know, you can find me on Instagram, @AKA_Cameron, on Twitter, @CameronDole, and my Facebook page, @CameronDoleAltus. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, feel free to click the support tab. We'll see you soon for episode 5.